Some of our listeners live in high state tax jurisdictions and aspire to relocate to low state tax jurisdictions. Today, we will meet with Chris Doyle, who is a tax partner at Hodgson Russ Law Firm, and he will explain the theory and practice of changing your personal tax residency. Go ahead, Chris.
There are a lot of wealthy individuals concentrated in New York City who don't like to pay taxes. The fine line that they need to walk is, what if they've got some living arrangement in New York City or in New York State and spend a significant amount of time there but don't want to pay New York taxes? In the last 5 years, demand for our services has been fueled by three factors. One is increases in state and local income taxes, particularly on the wealthy. The progressive movement has fueled the increase of high income taxes on the uber wealthy. I wouldn't deny that states need revenue to perform the services that we expect, but the burden for that has increasingly been visited upon the wealthy and the uber wealthy. The second was the Federal Tax and Jobs Act, which curtailed the federal tax deduction for state and local taxes so that only $10,000 of those taxes could be deducted each year. That took away a federal tax subsidy of the state taxes that were being paid. The third was COVID. COVID has been a life-changing event for many, many people. It has been the indicator that a remote working environment can work in many instances for many different businesses. That has in turn resulted in individuals wanting to accelerate their moves from high tax jurisdiction to low tax jurisdictions. If you can live anywhere, why would you want to live in a place where you have to pay the most taxes for the work that you do?
Some taxpayers live and work in different states. Which state receives the state income tax on wage income?
The U.S. federal constitution permits state governments to tax businesses and individuals on services performed for those individuals. The Due Process Clause and the Interstate Commerce Clause of the federal constitution require that taxes be fairly apportioned. For individual taxpayers, the resident state is required to give a credit in the home state for taxes paid to the other states in which the income is earned. Individual taxpayers pay tax on everything but get a credit from the other state in which taxes paid on earned income.
Let's move on to professional athletes like Derek Jeter, who worked for the New York Yankees but lived in Florida and played games all over the United States. Where does Jeter pay his state income taxes?
Derek Jeter actually had a residency case in New York State. He was very careful to maintain his Florida tax residency. Even as a non-resident of New York, he is required to pay tax to New York on the amount of his compensation that was earned in New York. New York State does that based on a duty days concept. The days that you spend in New York for mandatory minicamps are duty days. Game days are duty days. Practice days are duty days. And if you spend those in New York, then you have to allocate your salary to New York based on your duty days in New York versus total duty days. The only New York football team is the Buffalo Bills. And one of the reasons that there will never be a Super Bowl in New York State is because of New York's taxes. Most of the time, they go to Vegas or Florida or Texas, all states which do not have income taxes.
That's funny. I thought the reason they chose the Super Bowl location was due to the weather. And the worst possible place in January to host a Super Bowl would be in Buffalo. All right, next topic. God forbid, is it possible that a taxpayer could be required to pay state income taxes in two different states on the same income?
Well, if Connecticut is your home, you are a tax resident of Connecticut. If you've got pied-à-terre in New York State, you could be taxed in New York State as a resident. If you couple that with 183 days or more in New York, and for purposes of that 183-day rule, any part of a day is a day. So if you live in Stamford, Connecticut, and go shopping in New York, having nothing to do with your residence in New York. You just go grocery shopping there. That is a day in New York, even if you're only there for 90 minutes to go shopping. You're taxed as a resident on all of your worldwide income by both states. And you'd only get a credit in both of those resident states for income earned and taxes paid in another state, be that New York or Connecticut, for a dual state resident status. You'd be taxed on all of the investment income, the so-called unearned income, in both states, but only one of the states would end up taxing your earned income, because both resident states will give you a credit for the taxes paid in the other state on earnings from the other state.
Just clarifying, your wage income will be taxed only in one state, but your capital gains will be taxed in both states.
Yes.
You mentioned this concept of a residence test and a domicile test. Could you explain what those terms mean?
A domicile is where in your heart you feel your home is. In New York's approach is followed in many different states. That very subjective determination is determined by using five objective factors: relative time in the state, business connections in the state, location of close family, location of what are called near and dear items, and the final factor is the relative value and use of the homes that you have in both states. Those factors are compared and weighed, and a finder of fact will then use those factors to determine whether or not your home is in state A or state B. The easier determination is, assuming you're a domiciliary of state B, state A can still tax you as a resident if you are a resident under the statute. New York's rule is that permanent place of abode plus more than 183 days in the state. And if those two facts are met, then the bright line rule is you're a resident of New York, regardless of whether you're a domiciliary of another state.
Going back to the Derek Jeter case, he did some kind of an advertising campaign for New York City, and the advertisement had Jeter saying that his heart was in New York City. And Jeter ended up losing his tax domicile case because of that advertisement. A number of listeners have a place in the Hamptons and a home in New York City. During COVID, they spent most of their time outside the city. Do these Hampton residents still have to pay New York City taxes?
New York City has the same residency rule as New York State. So if you're domiciled in the city, you pay tax there no matter what. If you've got a place to live in New York City and are there more than 183 days, then you're a statutory resident of New York City.
All right, let's imagine you live in Larchmont, New York. You commute daily on the Metro North train. You work in Midtown and then go home at night. So you don't have a New York City residence tax. You only pay New York State taxes on your income.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Now, what about the poor guy who has a mansion in East Hampton as well as a penthouse apartment in the city? Is the question, where's his heart and mind? Is it in the Hamptons or in the city? Or alternatively, if he's spending more than 183 days in the city?
The heart and mind does not go into the 183 days test, but the heart and mind certainly would go into the calculus to determine whether a person was a New York City domiciliary.
So the poor guy has two kids in New York City's private schools, and they're spending as many days as they can in the Hamptons. And they end up spending only 170 days in New York City with those kids at school using remote learning situation like during COVID. Would that be sufficient to get out of New York City for tax purposes?
One of the procedural rules we deal with is the burden of proving is on the person asserting that residency has changed. So if the person that you described had always lived in the Hamptons and they spent all of their holidays, family gatherings, and every weekend in the Hamptons, and that it was only work and the children's education that brought them into New York City, I would say the burden would be on New York City to prove that the taxpayer that you've described is a domiciliary of New York City. If you told me, however, that the taxpayer you described had after college, started work, only had an apartment in New York City, lived in New York City for 20 years, and then after they became successful, bought a house out in the Hamptons and is now trying to establish not being a New York City resident, even after having admitted to being a New York City domiciliary, then the burden of proof would be on the taxpayer. I would say 90% of these cases are determined based on who bears the burden of proof. And if the state bears the burden of proof, it's very difficult for the state to withstand that standard. If the taxpayer bears a burden of proof, they control all the facts, so it's a little easier, but it is often the case where the burden of proof is outcome determining.
All right, let's change the facts. Let's imagine that those two kids who went to New York City private schools are off to college. They no longer live with you. It's just the husband and wife, and they've made the decision to change the way they live. And now they're spending 200 odd days out in the Hamptons and 100 days in New York City and 65 days outside of New York. At what point will their behavior be sufficient to get out of New York City, even if they have the burden of proof? How can they prove to New York City that they've abandoned their city domiciliary?
It's totally a facts and circumstances test. Auditors like to see 2 days in your domicile location. That seems to be a good indicator that you're no longer a domiciliary of New York City. It would help if one of the spouses had a business connection in the Hamptons, that all of the business connections are not in New York City. It would help if when the kids come home, they're coming home to the Hamptons and not to New York City. It would help if all of the major family holidays are spent in the Hamptons. If you've got artwork, if you've got a car collection, you'd want that near your home. And it would be better for that to be in the Hamptons than in New York City.
Many of our listeners would prefer to move to Miami than the Hamptons so they could pay zero state income taxes. What are the necessary steps for a taxpayer to prepare for that move?
I would do all the things I mentioned for the New York City versus Hamptons, for the New York City versus Florida taxpayer. I might want to see an event that triggers when domicile ended in New York City. Having a van move your really treasured items from New York City to Florida. I would want you to track your days using an app so that it was clear where you were every minute of every day during the year. I would want the person to spend 2 days in Florida for every day in New York City. I would encourage the person to be more active in social and charitable endeavors in Florida than they are in New York City. I would think that consistent with Florida being the domicile, birthdays, holidays would be in Florida and not in New York City. I think the best approach is the more abrupt event. It's better to have a major lifestyle change when you're asserting that you've moved. That makes the auditors more comfortable in determining that, yes, indeed, you have moved out of New York. In the year that you move to Florida, you actually buy a big place that is equally or more luxurious than the place that you have to live in New York State, and you move all your stuff down there, and you change your driver's licenses and the registration on your vehicles and all the other paperwork details. You could keep your New York place. That is a much more comfortable place for an auditor than this creeping domicile situation.
This state versus state taxation policy seems ludicrous to me. The founders never contemplated taxpayers living in multiple states. What is the long-term solution to this vexing state taxation problem?
If I were king for a day, I would have Congress pass a law that had a bright line rule that applied to all states. Under the Interstate Commerce Clause, Congress has the exclusive authority to govern commerce among the states. The problem is there are 50 states. They all have what they think is the right way to do things, and it is difficult to get all of the states to do anything the same way.
All right, the state income tax audit letter has just arrived in the mail, and you say, good God, why didn't I keep my records better? What should taxpayers who live in multiple states do to get prepared for the eventual audit?
There are apps available now that you can download on your phone that keep track of where your phone is. I think that that's a good idea. I think having something as simple as an Excel spreadsheet where you keep track of your whereabouts, if you're prepared for it, it shouldn't be horrible. Reproducing the records 3 years after the fact can be difficult and invasive. It doesn't happen very often, but every once in a while, you know, somebody swears up and down, I don't have a place in New York City. And it turns out the boyfriend or the girlfriend has a place in New York City that the spouse doesn't know about. And all of a sudden, New York State finds out about that. And then what do you do? And the answer is, well, you just pay.
I guess that's a special tax for being a sugar daddy.